Gene Hemrick here from Lima, Peru. This is my fourth recording since being here. One of the things I think most people would like to know is, how does an American who becomes a priest, who lives maybe in Massachusetts or Chicago or South Bend, Indiana, become a missionary and go to another country facing total cultural shock and survive? What are some of the, what you might call, missionary secrets for keeping it going in the midst of, at times, what seems to be total chaos, total poverty, total no can make any sense out of? Well, first of all, let's be honest. I did talk to some of the missionaries down here, and there have been men who have come down here and just couldn't make it. In fact, one missionary told me, well, we sent him back in a straitjacket. It is true, when you come down into another country and live in a poor area, all of the things that you're used to are not there. And then trying to speak another language, understand its customs and all of that, for some people that will blow a circuit or two. And it's just too much. They can't absorb it. They can't go with it. And it's better that they're not here rather than trying to gut it out and it just not working out. So that's the fact of life and missionary work. Last night we had what they call a soiree. It's a French word. It means a get-together. You have one or two of the missionaries cooking, and everybody who's in the area is invited to come. And there's food, there's a little drink, and there's a lot of conversation. It's what we call camaraderie, and this is what keeps a lot of people together, not only in the missions, but in life itself. There is something to having, it's every Thursday, something to have, something to look forward to, something to look forward to as far as, well, somebody's going to cook, maybe it'll be something different and new. And then to be able to sit down and compare notes. And that's exactly what we did last night. It was just a delightful evening. The language, the predominant language was Spanish, but not to the point where you couldn't understand it or you couldn't communicate. From my point of view, I get along very well. I was sitting next to a priest who was just ordained a year. I asked him what he was doing, and he told me, tomorrow I have an examination, una proba, test. And I said, in what? And he said, teologia, which is theology. And we talked about it and what it's like to study. And then as I was talking to him and one or two other priests there in the group, I asked them, I said, ¿Qué es el problema prima? What is the biggest problem here? And without hesitation, this young priest said, work. People don't have work. I thought he might have said something else. I thought he might have said, you know, marriage is on the rocks, children who aren't brought up properly, whatever. But no, he just said work. And the others at the table sort of agreed. And so did others that I talked to today about this. It points out that when you're living in a poor area, if you can come home with a check at night, it means so very much. First of all, work gives you identity. Who you are and what you are about. There's something beautiful about work in that respect. Second of all, it gives you some sense of security. Now I can buy this or that for my wife, for my children, for my husband, for the home. And that is comforting that you have this and you can spend. And then to be able to work in an impoverished area, you feel that's a gift. And so there's an appreciation there. And this is really something that nowadays, in our country and throughout the world, with the economic situation being as difficult as it is, we're beginning to realize the value of work and not to take for granted our jobs and that we will always have work. And I think that, again, is worldwide in regards to the way people look at work more and more today. While we were together, I had to ask myself, well, what else is it that keeps these men going? And basically, when you hear what they're doing, well, that's at the core. All of them have many ministries, not just one. It's just not celebrating the Mass, although that is very key to most of their lives. But basically, they're helping people by hearing confessions, listening to problems and counseling, working with the schools, and working with the medical field and trying to get doctors to do pro bono work. I mean, there are so many wonderful little success stories here. One of them, and I've talked about this earlier, is the school system that they have. I thought this one school I was at, which was called Fe y Alegría, it's faith and joy. And I thought, well, this is really a wonderful name for a school. But it's a whole series of schools based on a very good educational principle. Namely that when the school is built, the people in the area all chip in. And when I say chip in, they come, they help to build the walls, they help to build the floors, they help to clean things. So you get the parents involved right at the ground level. And that is one of the requirements for getting your child into the school. It's a great model because so often parents will dump their children and leave the responsibility of formation of their children and education of their children, two different things, to the teachers. We used to have a saying in loco parentis that we as teachers took over the place of the parents. This model of school is just the opposite. The parents are to be the model for the children with the school. These schools, as I've said before, are very, very clean, very upbeat, and also very in range of what they offer. It's not just the sciences and mathematics and the three R's, but also there's parts of those schools that are for children who are less gifted, who might want to fix cars or do some work with furniture, things like that, woodworking. So it's quite a conglomerate of schools, and they're throughout not only Peru, but through other countries. I was told that the Jesuits were the ones who created this model. About the school, especially about a good friend of mine who brought me here, Brother John Benish. Wherever he has taken me, and I know he hasn't done this on purpose, his imprint is there. The school Fe y Alegría, well, he showed me what it was like when he first came there. And it was just a rubble. That was just a hill of dirt. And then what he did was he got some government workers to come in there and put tiers in so that you layered the ground and you have this beautiful now courtyard. And it was his engineering. He's quite an architect. And he laid that out. But then yesterday he took me out to the formation house that they have for young men who might want to have a vocation to the priesthood. It's beautiful. It's out in the country. I have pictures of it on the website. But wherever we went, he said, well, you see those outdoor lamps? That's my work. And he loves to work with glass. And he took me into their chapel, which was absolutely beautiful, the way he laid out the glass work. He is a mathematician by trade, and he has a gift for laying out patterns. And they're all mathematically perfect. It almost saw a Frank Lloyd Wright taste to it. And then he showed me the different types of glass he worked with and how you first draw it all up and then you lay it in. And the people he went to in order to learn how to do this, he went to a glass factory and said, look, I'll pay you for the first frame, but you show me how you do this so that I can then do the rest of them. And the different types of glass and the color that brings into a chapel or into not only just a chapel, when you walk in a hallway and there it is. It's that type of thing, I believe, that also keeps these men here. They all have tasks, things that they really like to do, to organize, to create programs. When I was in Lima with Father Roberto, he was so proud of the programs he had for the Rosary and many of the things that they were putting on CDs now, and also a radio program and some videos. Well, you know, when you think about it, this is what propels people. They've got a mission, and they know what they're doing, and they get caught up in it. And sure, there's all types of poverty and difficulties around them, but they've got a work to do. And it's they're at that work. We call it in Latin, ad rem. That's it. That's what's governing them. And this is, I believe, what really sustains these men. This and the soiree, the coming together, exchanging ideas, having a little fun together, and then the work itself, which is very, I think it's very gratifying. I was looking at the windows of Brother John Benish, and I thought to myself, they are so, so beautifully designed. And then it occurred to me, there's an order here. When you have order, when you have beauty, when you have goodness, you have God. One of the things I learned in philosophy is that the word beauty is a transcendental term. And when you talk about beauty, in its essence, you're talking about God. And so all of these things that these brothers and priests are doing to create beauty, to create education, to create order in the minds of the students, to bring together parents so that there's sort of a working together with the school, the children, education, there is order and there's beauty. And I believe in the midst of this, this is God's kingdom here on earth. Well, that's the end of this session. It has been really a delight being here. I will be heading back to Chicago, Washington, D.C., on Monday. I may have one more installment, but as of now, that is it.